Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your host, PK, for Monday evening, December 5th, 2011. And I want to say hello to everybody. I want to thank again, always as I do, bbsradio.com for promoting free speech, free thoughts, and myself promoting free minds and free markets. On this show, we talk about history, I talk about economics, philosophy, geopolitics, I slam hard on Zionism, and I slam on Israel. I am not afraid of that topic, and as I speak, one of my greatest heroes who is Jewish is above me on my desk, Ludwig von Mises, is one of the deans of the Austrian School of Economics, as well as my other hero, Murray Rothbard. Today I have a friend on, a guest, a friend that I'm bringing on who is, he's a Vietnam vet. He was there in the thick of things, I think 68 and 69. And he's also an accomplished musician. And he is also quite the accomplished, a licensed electrician and sound engineer. So he's double smart in those areas. So we're going to have a chat tonight about some current events, I'm sure the Middle East, and also the military and the defense budget and pensions. And I'm going to criticize or critique a lot about the military budget tonight and the waste that has that people seem to overlook. They don't mind criticizing the welfare budget, but they seem to give the military a free pass. So we're going to have a talk about that, too, amongst other things. And my friend Jeff, who's coming on, Jeff has listened to my show before. He knows I'm kind of controversial on stuff. So we'll see how far we can push the envelope tonight. Jeff, are you out there? I guess not. I don't hear anybody in the office. So anyway, my friend Jeff and I, we had dinner the other night, and he was telling me about these massive billions that are spent on retirement, military retirement. And it's huge, the amount, and it's got to be riddled with some fraud there, or people who are double dipping, or people who don't need the money. I mean, I'm all for the veterans and their rights and their benefits, but something is askew here, it would seem like. I'm getting a note from the suits here. Hang on, masses. I'll let you know in a moment. I don't see it yet. I don't see your note. Jeff, are you out there? I don't hear anybody yet, so I'll keep talking until they get him. Oh, he's ringing. Okay. He's expecting the call. So, you know, I'm very pro gun ownership. I'm all for a defense of the country, but that's not the issue. That to me is a given. The, defense is a given. Hello, Jeff, are you out there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Welcome to Third Stream View.
Well, Mr. PK, I'm here at your disposal.
Thank you. You should be disposed of. No, before I start, would you care for some tea or coffee?
Yes, I would. I'd like some blended tea. I know you make great tea.
That's true, but it's self-service here, so you'll have to take care of your own needs there.
All right.
Well, I'm glad that you came on. I was worried about we had any connection problem there at first, but I can tell that you're here. I recognize your distinct voice. Also, a voice that in your not-so-distant past was quite the singing voice, I understand.
Oh, yeah, I I sang for about 30 years.
Wow. Did you sing in tune?
No. Not according to the rest of the members of the band.
Yeah. Yeah. Your voice was tuned at the factory. So we're just going to skip around here, but I was interested in what you had said the other night. You had mentioned about you read a figure about military, the pensions, the retirement funding. And I have not seen this information, but I know that there's massive spending in the military and it seems to go unquestioned. And that doesn't mean that I'm not pro-defense or pro-American. It's like, hey, if there's waste there, there's waste there. If there's waste in the welfare system, as we know there is, there's waste there. It's not a matter of being anti-American or any hatred of country. I want to just get that out there in the you know, right away. And of course, you're a veteran, a Vietnam veteran, so thank you for your bravery and your service. But sort of like that's where it ends, and then there's foreign policy. And I'm always, you know, thankful to the vets and our active duty. But now foreign policy is another issue which I'll never back away from. So let's where do you want to start? You want to start back in your days of service during the thick of the Vietnam thing, or do you want to get into this military pension deal?
Well, you know, just a brief maybe summary of where I'm coming from. You know, I was a musician until about 23. I got drafted very late in life. I wasn't thinking I was ever going to see it, but all of a sudden it snuck up and bit me. I was in New York recording with Roulette Records. Had some pretty good contracts going, and so the Army blew a big hole in that. I tried a lot of little tricks and games to get out of the Army, you know, because I really preferred to, go after a singing and band type of hopeful career. But the Army put a military in Vietnam put a big hole in that. I was shipped off to boot camp, Fort Bragg, and then off to Thailand, and then over to Vietnam. It's kind of funny. I got a letter from a guy not too long ago. Actually, it's been about a year, but I really didn't get back to him because I wasn't sure I could add much to his letter. But he was requesting information about all the guys that was in a certain area where I was located in Vietnam, up in Quang Tri province, which is close to the DMZ. And the whole area there, I didn't realize it while I was there, was heavily sprayed with Agent Orange. So he was kind of checking in on everybody he could to find out our health and who might have had a lot of similar diseases and problems that had showed up. Fortunately, I don't think I fall into that. No, one of the bad parts of it was that the stuff was sprayed into the water a lot and around the vegetation, so it flowed its way into all the rivers and all the streams and got down into a lot of the rivers that ran into the military's little areas and stuff. And one of the things that we did that we thought was really cool was we had a big old tub up in the air on some stilts that we used to pump water out of this little stream in there and then take showers from. And I noticed once or twice when I tried using that my skin broke out like immediately, like a harsh rash. So since we were based on the China Sea, that was my last time of using that water. I decided I was going to do all my washing, even if it was salt water, swimming and going out in the ocean. That was just, you don't even know what's going on around you when things are going on. You know, they could have said, beware of the water, but no.
Well, what saddens me on that is I've seen shows, it's probably been 10, 15 years ago, but I've seen maybe with 60 Minutes or somewhere, numerous vets afflicted with Agent Orange, and they had to sue the Veterans Administration or the military to get taken care of. So that really irks me. I've never served. I don't think it's my duty, a person's duty to serve. I don't have anything against those who serve, but I'll certainly never. I'll always defend the fact that I didn't serve, and I don't think that makes me worse or less of an American. Blah blah blah. But it just really irks me to see our vets have to fight or sue to get treatment for Agent Orange and then later on Gulf War syndrome? The military doesn't even take care of its own very well afterwards, it seems to me. You know, why should any of these guys be left twisting in the wind? Why aren't they, you know, why aren't they given all the resources possible to take, you know, to take care of themselves, to get them the medical treatment, whatever else they need?
Well, you know, when you get shipped off to like Thailand, like I was, and then you move into, and then you're sent to Vietnam, what they call TDY, is temporary tour of duty. They don't really count the soldiers in Vietnam when they're on temporary tour of duty. Only when you're shipped directly to Vietnam and you're considered a Vietnam assignee. We were assigned to Thailand, but we went over there with the intention of going from Thailand to Vietnam, which I was not aware of. I was hoping that we were going to stay in Thailand. That was pretty nice over there.
I would have stayed.
It was nice, but then when we got over to Vietnam, of course, we were living in a hole in the ground on the ocean with rockets coming in and being shot at pretty regular, because they were trying to knock out because I was in a supply company. And so the thing, one of the things that's in this letter that I just found out, which I'm really going to look into, is that when you go on temporary tour of duty, it's supposed to be, or TDY, it's supposed to be special pay for that when you go into like another country or even into a war zone for that. And very, very few. In fact, in this letter, the guy told me, he said he only knows of one person that got paid for being over in Vietnam. You know, not paid, but paid extra for being there. It was just like being in Thailand, which was, you know, just an easygoing, normal pay. But when you go into a war zone, you get paid, you know, more or less a hazardous duty pay, which none of us got. So that was kind of a ripoff, which I didn't realize. And it was, you know, there was thousands and thousands of us in this company. So we, none of the guys got paid that.
So you're owed some back pay for putting your life on the
line. Yeah, and I'm hoping it's a lot.
I don't think you'll ever see it.
I doubt it. No.
Our company
was, when they put the New Jersey back in operation for some reason to go over to Vietnam to shoot their big, they shot, the New Jersey used to be able to shoot like a 23-inch round shell. I mean, you can imagine 1 foot but 2 foot wide shell zooming across the sky. And in the beginning, but the whole time it was there, every now and then they would make mistakes with getting the range.
Oh, no.
And I remember one of those big rounds dropping into our company grounds one time. I wasn't real close to it, but it blew a pretty good sized hole and destroyed a bunch of equipment we had there. But things like that went on every day. There was so many guys accidentally blown apart and killed. You know,
that's scary.
The whole idea is to get away from it. You know, and get home. They wanted me to stay in Vietnam and work for a private company because I drove these amphibians. And I said, well, my time was up. I got my butt right out of there. I wasn't about
to stay. Well, that's what Afghanistan's full of private companies now, all on the tax trough.
Oh yeah.
Well, so was it hard to sleep in Vietnam? When you were out in those, you know, that perimeter, that base or whatever? Was it hard to get sleep with the shells coming in? I mean, did you ever have rest? Did you get much restful sleep?
Well, you really got used to it, so you slept pretty good. You know, the only time we had to pull perimeter duty, which was like imagine a beach line, and then you have like a huge circle, like a half circle around your area, going out maybe a mile or two from the ocean line. All along that perimeter, we had like about every, maybe 50 foot, 60 foot, we had an area of defense. And each night, a couple of guys would man those defense things and coordinate between all the different ones left and right of where you were. And it was nerve-wracking. I mean, the Viet Cong used to come in and play games with us. Like one time they came in and they turned the Claymore mines around at us. The next morning a guy went out because we'd been expecting for them to attack. And so the guy went out to check the claymores, and he had found that the claymores were turned around backwards. So, like, if they'd attacked us and he'd have hit the plunger to pop the claymores, they'd have been shooting back at us instead of out there, which meant they could have come right through that area. So they were constantly working on little ploys of doing things, and it was pretty scary. You know, like when you were out there, it was nerve wracking. You know, you couldn't smoke. You had a cigarette up by your mouth, they're liable to get a sniper and knock your head off.
Wow.
So you ducked down. It was pretty easy to stay awake when you were out there. You know, because your whole thought was. Because you were usually tired because you'd been up all day. You didn't, like, sleep all day and then go out and pull night duty. You worked all day and then did that extra. So you were tired out there at night. You know, there was no coffee. You know, there was nothing.
Really?
You know, oh, yeah. You know, so you're out there, you know, like, slapping yourself around trying to stay awake, you know, looking out and constantly waiting to hear anything that happens out in front of you. I was good. I was glad to get away from there. I really, you know, it was pretty nerve wracking. You know, like.
Well, they issue speed to pilots in Afghanistan or Iraq.
I went down. You know, they
issue it to military. It's all done through the military, but they issue that stuff to pilots and whatnot.
Well, they've gotten smarter now. I mean, you know, they know when it's hard to stay awake and be really alert. So if you're, you know, a lot of times. Things like that, you know, things happen because some guy goes to sleep and they can slip in right through where he's at and come in behind all the other positions.
Right.
Because everybody's looking out, so nobody's looking behind them, so they can slip in through. If somebody goes to sleep, they can slip in there and they can slip in like 30 or 40 real fast and come in behind you and over in one little swoop, they could knock out, you know, a couple hundred guys. And then go on into the company ground if they were planning a major thing. They were planning a gas attack the whole time. Towards the end of when I was there, we kept looking for them because we were being told, you know, keep your gas mask and everything close at hand because they might be shooting rockets in with gas. And it was all.
I never heard of that in that war. I never heard of that.
Oh yeah, they did a lot of that.
Did they ever use it? Gas?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they shot nerve gas into different areas. It had been done in certain other areas from where we were. We never got hit with it, but we were constantly looking out for it. But one night they had a movie, and this other company that was in there that had come into the area wanted to share in the beer, which was kind of hard to come by, and it was hot anyway. It was like warm beer. If you don't like. Beer, and you definitely wouldn't like warm beer. And because they also put a lot of preservatives in it, so it wasn't the best tasting anyway. But these guys were mad because they couldn't, none of the guys that were there, they had a certain amount of beer ration, so they were angry that they couldn't share in it. So they pulled a prank and put some tear gas in the tent while we were watching the movie. And we saw the smoke just kind of moving through the tent, getting into the, you know, like a projector's beam in it. And somebody yelled, gas, gas. And, man, that place, everybody was running in all directions because we thought they'd finally hit us with a gas attack. If they could have, wow. If the guys in the company could have caught the guys that did that, there would have been an instant killing. they'd have been shot on sight, you know.
Wow. Well, you know, Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, is a Vietnam vet. He was in the Navy SEALs or one of those departments similar to that. And I don't know if you followed him much at all lately, but as has been proven, this whole Gulf of Tonkin thing that got the U.S. involved and the Johnson got us involved in Vietnam was a myth. It was a fraud. It was a lie. All these guys died and all these, you know, civilians died for just a lie and all this nonsense. I've been learning that a lot of these wars that America fought last century were unnecessary and, you know, based on lies or, you know, trying to engineer things and enable things to happen. So, and again, our troops fought valiantly and bravely, but that's still a separate issue from what got us into there. You know, and the first thing that our troops and the American people deserve, or any person, is to know the truth from their government, not to be, Yeah, that never did anything to you. Like, you know, I still, Muhammad Ali was right when he said no Viet Cong ever called me nigger. And he had no, and he was a fighter, but he had no, saw no reason to go to it. So I have a Canadian friend who teases me about, says, you Americans kept the Viet Cong or the Vietnamese from coming ashore on our West Coast. He says, you expendable yeah, right. Americans. But, you know, you have to admit, though, that they were some pretty hellacious fighters, those Viet Cong. I mean, you know, for what they had, the resources they were pretty damn tough.
Yeah, they had some really good good leaders. You know, they were good. All of the field commanders for the Viet Cong and everything, they were, you know, they earned their, you know, the respect of their men and everything because they really got down in the trenches and worked hard with them. Not like our generals who bounced around in a helicopter and
right.
or flew from base to base and showed up once in a while. I mean, these guys were. You know, they were right with their men fighting, you know, and getting down in there, you know, even if they were, I guess you've seen, you know, a lot of these movies, you know, like that one, there was a movie out that showed the Viet Cong in their tunnels and us running them off the mountain and doing a few things and stuff like that. And that, you know, it went back and forth, but they ran us into the ground a lot, too.
Well, they had elaborate tunnels. I mean, that's what gave them such power and strength, I think, is the tunnels and their stick-to-itiveness, their ability to come back and hammer you and then disappear.
Well, we were told that right out in front of our area that there was a, I think, 20,000-man battalion, and they couldn't find them. I mean, they were out there, but they would disappear and move at night. You know, so that meant they, you know, they, I don't think you can... Those, you know, they used to say, well, they'd go into the villages. No, 20,000 people can't slip into the villages without being noticed by the Marines and the Army and everything when they go through those villages looking for Viet Cong, which meant that those guys were, most of them were down inside those tunnels all day, you know, all during the daytime, and they'd come out and tanks would, you know, be moving. They'd see them, you know, with night vision and try to bomb them at night and stuff like that.
Wow.
There would be tanks and big guns moving at night, and during the day it was nothing.
Well, look at Vietnam's history. I mean, they fought the French. No, sorry, they fought the Chinese. They fought the French, and the French helped them kick the Chinese out of Vietnam. Then they fought the Japanese, and then, you know, the French again, and the Americans. So, you know, they're seasoned. You know, they're not real big people, but they're... You know, anybody who's got an AK-47 is a pretty formidable threat. And like the saying goes, they won the war, but we had better songs.
Well, you know, the one of the biggest things about North and South Vietnam was mainly the North Vietnam government and the people of North Vietnam wanted South Vietnam as part of one country, mainly because of one purpose only. It was a very rich vegetation country, and it could supply so much more food.
What, the
and
South?
So that was their main want for having South Vietnam become one country of Vietnam, no South or North, just Vietnam. And there was so much corruptness within borders, and come protect us and keep the North from the South and the South from the North. You just don't, when you go over there and you meet all those people and you see, you know, they're just funny little nice, most of them really nice people. And, they're just being just like us, you know, just being manipulated into going into a war, you know, and losing all these young men's lives and everything. You know, it used to be the way to keep population down, but I think that's a sad way of taking care of population.
Well, and the way they do it, of course, militaries always do that. It's like, you know, our guys over there in Vietnamistan, Afghanistan, you know, guys that were your age, 23, young guys like that, even older guys don't, but young guys like that, they have no real concept of world history or world geography or geopolitical events. And they're, you know, they're trained to this us against them mentality. They don't really ask any questions. They don't, you know, and when I was younger, I used to be, you know, I just loved, you know, World War II movies, and, you know, I used to draw pictures of American tanks and everything, but I never got beyond all that. Now I'm much further beyond that, and I'm seeing, you know, how these things were engineered and how you know, people are just sheep manipulated, and our troops are just, you know, I think cannon fodder in a lot of ways. They're just lives thrown away by the globalists of the day. So now that brings us up to your what you had said about, I think you said 50 billion. Was it 50 billion a year for the military pensions?
There was an interview, I guess, on one of the talk shows on the public radio talk shows about just a couple of days ago, and this fellow was he was a retiree, you know, military retiree, and he's collecting, you know, a couple, I think 3,000 or something a month, and that's not even Social Security, you know. I don't know how that works. I don't know if you can collect Social Security along with military retirement, because, you know, Social Security kicks in at 65, and military retirement can kick in like from 43 to 46. You know, because after you do your 20 years, you know, so then you're a young man still, or, you know, hardly middle aged, and you're already retired from either the Air Force, you know, the Navy or whatever. If you do your 20 years, most of them get, and they get a lot more if they spend it, just like Social Security. If you wait till you're 70 or something like that, you pick up a couple more $100, you know. And within the military, it's the same way. If they go, like, instead of 20, if they go 25 years, if they're really wanted to be kept in, sometimes they want you to drop, they want you to retire. But if a lot of guys stay in and they pick up that extra couple of years, they're picking up a lot of extra money monthly just for that, you know, and they're being paid already, you know, pretty good salary with a lot of benefits while they're in the military. It's not the best life in the world, but it's far from being unemployed and looking for work. And but they, you know, this guy was saying that he felt actually a little bad about the country being in such debt and people that hardly can't have medical and can't find work, and here he is. He's just, and his is not even a real high, retirement. I mean, his is just the average officer retirement thing, and he was collecting $3,000 a month. I would love to collect $3,000 a month from anything.
But these guys are not officers, are they?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you're, you can be making, most of them are officers, I think, in the Air Force and things like that. Probably pension for normal. I really don't know the pay scale for the military, Air Force, Marines, the Army, Navy, Coast Guard, and all that. For different retirement, benefits and what they all offer. But it's just pretty great, though. I mean, you know, it's nothing. The guy that doesn't really make out is the guy that goes over there and gets his head almost blown off and loses a foot or a leg, and comes back and can't hardly get treated. And he has only, you know, maybe a year or two, although a lot of people that get blown up, too, are professional soldiers where they've been over there, you know, be a sergeant or a lieutenant, and they've been there for years, and some Humvee gets blown out from under them with a big explosion, and they lose a foot or lose a leg, or some of them lose their life, you know. The monies that the people get in benefits from being blown apart are hardly nothing compared to the guy who's lived a fairly easy military life as either an officer or just stationed here and there and around the country, and gets out after 20 years and just walks away, maybe never even seen any action or any wartime.
Right.
You know, he's just living a good thing, and that's what's so unbalanced about the guys that put their life on the line and the guys who just live stateside or get nice duty in Germany or someplace, and they just lay back and live really comfortably all these places and enjoy life and come back and get out and retire and make a whole lot of money on retirement. And the guy who goes over there for 18 months or, you know, almost gets his life pulled away, comes back, you know, his wife's, his kids don't know who he is because he's gone a little crazy or, you know, or whatever. You know, war is, you know, this war is terrible. It's been that way, you know, forever. You know, there's only a certain amount of greed that can be justified, and war is not one of them.
Well, there's, yeah, but now, I mean, especially in the 20th century, yeah, war's always been around, but never have there been the deliberate bombings of civilian areas. I mean, even in Napoleon's day and even before that, you know, yes, I know civilians have always been killed in wars, but not near the magnitude or the zeroing in on or like what happened to Germany and Europe or the just relentless bombing in Japan of civilian areas, you know, so just really tragic. And, you know, and of course, the military, the generals, you know, and the military industrial complex and the presidents and the politicians, they all retire with their fat pensions and plenty of money while those young, you know, kids are getting killed or wounded and they don't get squat. And it still seems to be that way.
Well, you know, like you say, war is being fought a lot differently now. Like during, I mean, the Americans were probably the first militia and army to not just line up and let the British mow them down. They used to hide in the trees and get behind things, and that's right. Why such a small army took on, you know, the British army and basically beat them, because the way we fought was more like the, you know, just like how we're kind of lining up the way we fight over there, like the British did. And we got these guys hiding behind and blowing stuff up and pulling all these, you know, all these things. It's not like where you had a field or that was, you know, 400 yards wide or something like that, and everybody lined up and everybody just went at each other like when they did, like in Braveheart and all these different movies and stuff.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
was the way they used to fight. All
and Napoleonic.
Everybody drew a line, and you're over there, and I'm over here, and now we go at it, and whoever's left standing is the winner. But you know, that was kind of stupid anyway. You know, I mean,
of course, yeah, yeah. But even so, the Revolutionary War, yeah, the colonists, you know, they won, but, you know, in reality, you know, Britain didn't send that large of a force either, because they had a global, you know, empire that they were administering. So, you know, and one of the things that the colonists, as I understand it, you know, they revolted against taxes. Well, some of those taxes, as I understand it, were imposed because Britain was trying to collect some of what it spent defending the colonies, you know, like 10, 20 years earlier for the French and Indian War, because that was quite expensive for Britain to, you know, maintain that and defending the colonies. George Washington fought on the side of the British in that war, as did other officers. So, I mean, that's just how it was. Now, you know, today we have Afghanistan, which is known as the graveyard of empires. Alexander had trouble in there, Alexander the Great. Britain took it on the chin twice there, two Afghan wars, and Russia got their butt kicked. So now it's our turn. But I don't feel humiliation or beat about it. I just think it was a stupid thing in the first place, the way they went about it. And those people have always been tribal. That's how they are. They're tribal, they're primitive. And, you know, they're only going to come into the 20th century when they come in on their own, I think. You know, it's got to be solved by political means. And meanwhile, opium production is at an all-time high. I've seen video of American and British troops basically defending, you know, protecting the poppy fields.
that's standing around sharing in the poppy fields probably, too.
Well, not really. But they have been enjoying a lot of hashish because, you know, the military is desperate probably for people. Now they need recruits, and so they're not firing people like they used to for this and that. I think if you were tested out in the field, if you were tested out there or you had cannabis in your urine or whatever, I don't think they'd kick you out. They may have done it 10, 20 years ago, but they're not doing it now. And as I understand, a lot of our troops over there are smoking a lot of that Afghani hash. Which is quite good, by the way. I've had some in Amsterdam. I think it comes in like a Tootsie Roll. I know some of the Pakistani hashish does. So, but that's just a little side mention there. So, getting back to this pension stuff, I mean, $3,000 a month doesn't seem too bad to me. These double dippers I read about maybe 20, 25 years ago, these a lot of these former generals or whatnot. And of course, once they get out of service, they often then they are in the corporate world of the military industrial complex. They come back and forth, all wrapped up in patriotism, of course, but sucking up a lot of our taxes in retirement funds, you know, that seem like way out of line with what regular folks would get.
Yeah, but you know what you just said about, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 doesn't seem to be out of line. But when you think about most people that have paid in really good Social Security money most of their life and had companies and small businesses, when they break loose and start picking up Social Security, the average person doesn't pick up more than about $1,000 a month from Social Security. And that's at 65 to 70.
Where well, that's
a person
all...
but a person in the military starts picking that up 20 years before that. I mean,
yeah.
They're like picking it up in the 40s, where you're picking it up 65 to 70 and for Social Security. So they're making three times as much and starting to pick it up, and they're going to live from, you know, let's say 45, 55, 65, 75, they're going to get that for like 30 or 40 years, where the average person's on Social Security only picks it up and maybe runs with it for about 20 years before they, you know, kick the bucket, you know, and it's all, you know, it stops. But the military has this really deep pocket of money that they're
our
given
money
as retirement. And they live so, you know, they're living on it for like 40 years, where Social Security people are living on an average of 20 years. And they're getting twice or three times as much for their retirement. So I think it's very unfair. You know, it's as bad as these senators and people that have these retirement things and monies that they get when they retire that's a couple hundred thousand dollars a year salaries. When they retire, I mean,
it's ridiculous. And Ron Paul refuses it. I could see if somebody, I'm totally for term limits. If somebody had served two terms and they got a pension for those years, a small pension for, you know, paid into something for those 8 years, you know, that would be it. But nothing, this lifetime, ridiculous, huge, you know, they get fat pension. I guess it's more justified in the military because they're the military. They served our country. I guess that's how they, you know, how they do that. Incidentally, supposedly, as I recall, what's his name? The Secretary of Defense with Bush. I can picture him. I can't think. The heck was his name? He said that the Pentagon lost like $1 trillion, that $1 trillion are gone missing or, you know, something like that. And it turns up that the accounting wing of the Pentagon or whatever, a lot of the offices that were in charge of that, were that section of the building was destroyed on 9/11. So, you know, I don't know if it's a conspiracy
that
there.
That was bad.
Yeah, it was, I can't think of his name. With the glasses, he had the glasses. I can't stand the guy, but he was the Secretary of Defense. Why can't I think of his name all of a sudden?
The military and the government and all that kind of stuff has always been, you know, so far on the back burner for me, because all you ever see is like right now, like for instance, they talk about here it's almost time for them to pick the Republicans to pick a guy. They've had 4 years to get something together since they were, you know, beat, or all right, 3.5 years. And so here they got, they're running up against the line, and they haven't really got anybody worth, putting in there. You know, Ron Paul is the best guy, but nobody will give him any kind of recognition because he doesn't play their game. You know, and if you don't play their game, they're not going to let you in.
Well, he's getting more recognition than last time, and he's hanging in there. He could win in Iowa, so we still have to support him all the way. You can see on YouTube a lot of interviews. He's a lot of interviews lately, and you know, they even the people who don't like him, they pretty much agree with him on the economics. But back to the foreign policy, you know, they don't. The neocons don't like him on that, and you know, war is brewing with Iran. I don't want to see that. That's going to be a real mess if they do that. Besides, the U.S. gets only 10% maybe of their oil from the Middle East. Most of the U.S. oil comes from Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela. So there's no reason to have this massive amount of money spent on, you know, the Middle East and, of course, Israel.
Our buddy Chavez, huh?
You know, I deplore his domestic socialist agenda. He's an idiot as far as his domestic socialist agenda and his managing of the economy and his, you know, in socialism. But I do admire the way he stands up to U.S. foreign policy, because you know, I hate the federal government. Don't hate America, but I hate the federal government, and they're the problem. They mess everything up here at home and abroad when you look at what they do. Because, you know, the states can't station troops in other countries. The states can't declare war on other countries. It's the feds who've done all this. And that's the major problem I see. That's why, and Ron Paul's in favor of it. We're all in favor of nullification, where the states would say, you know, we're going to nullify these federal laws and rules because they're not constitutional. We're going to nullify them. We nullify them. So I'm all in favor of that. Because I, you know, I hate to see where the country's going.
Well, they just won't recognize anything that he's doing. You know, it's like if you listen to the radio or television or any of the talk shows or anything at all, he's just completely left out because they just don't want to promote him. You know, they're promoting the guys that you know. It's kind of like they all follow the leader, whoever's putting down the information. That they're told to follow, they follow. You know, I don't know if it's the head of the stations or where it's all. You know, who's dropping the big buck on?
Well, they serve the regime, the status quo. And in fact, there's a recent event that Ron Paul has not been invited to. The Republican Jewish Committee has not invited him. Huntsman's not going either, but Ron Paul has not been invited. So I think it works in his favor because he gets more publicity out of it. They don't want him there because he doesn't want to give any tax money to Israel. Well, he doesn't want to give any foreign aid to anybody, but apparently if you don't give any money to Israel or don't want any aid to Israel, then that somehow makes you anti-Semitic, which is ridiculous. I mean, you know, what other country has such a sway over American politicians and American foreign policy? It's ridiculous. And on this show, the mighty, irrepressible PK always hammers away at it because it is a very serious problem.
I know it is. You know, the times are here where you hear everything that's going on, but you don't know what you don't hear that's going on because they smother that. You know, you think you're hearing what's going on. Because you know, you say, well, you know, nobody can hide from anything anymore. Everybody, you got the internet, you got people writing all these little notes and flying them around to the internet, and so nothing can be kept secret anymore. But that's not true.
You're right, basically, even with the internet, because the government they stage everything, and the CIA has its tentacles deeply into the media, the universities. So there's a lot of half-truths out there, and it's all mixed together. And, you know, there's a great line from Lawrence of Arabia that I like where this British politician is telling Lawrence that, you know, people who tell lies like me merely hide the truth. But people who tell half-lies have forgotten where they put it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what they do.
It's like this local thing they have here in the Orlando area where they saw the this deputy chief or something of going into the drug rooms and stuff like that and sneaking out with some of the drugs and things, and they got him on video, and yet nobody's going to prosecute him or anything or do anything about it. You know, and it's like it makes you wonder, like, who are they protecting when they see a guy who's fairly high up doing something as stupid as stealing drugs out of the property room?
Well, you should know, Jeff, that, you know, of course they all cover for their own, but, you know, the old saying, cops have the best dope.
They got the most.
Yeah, they got the best, so it's just, you know, it's on film there. The Secretary of Defense I was talking about was that idiot Rumsfeld, you know, part of the gang who said it would be a cakewalk.
Right,
you know. Yeah. Hey, well, I have a call here. Rebecca from California is on line two. Rebecca, are you out there? Hello.
I'm doing
welcome
great. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to Third Stream View.
Thanks. Just listening to your show, and I had a thought, and I checked it on the internet. I was wondering if retired military could get military pay plus Social Security benefits, and yes, they can.
And where do you stand on that? Are you from? Do you have a military in the family, or what is your view on that?
Well, I lost some uncles in Pearl Harbor. My dad went to World War II. But I have to agree with the person that you have as the guest.
Jeff.
You know, these are the people that are out in the trenches. Their lives are getting effed up. They want to get out as soon as possible, get back home, deal with their families. And, you know, they have no sorts of resources in to deal with any of the complications. So, you know, I know people who have retired out of the military, but it does seem like their jobs were pretty easy. I mean, these are the people that can be in their 40s, and they look like they're in their 30s because they haven't had a high stress level.
True. And would you say that, of course, you know, the people, the active duty, those guys, to me, my heart goes really out for them. I want them to have something. But, I pull back with the generals and the guys who had it pretty easy. I don't think that they should be on the gravy train. Or I think they should have something, but it really needs to be looked at.
I think it needs to be readdressed. And one of the things I was quickly scanning, because I did want to be able to get on the air and talk, is that you can also get extra sorts of credits that bring in additional $100 or a couple hundred dollars a month. There's some criteria for that as well. So let's see. Like if you were, you can get extra earnings that apply to active military service if you were in from 57 to 2001, and you can be credited with an additional $300 earnings for each calendar quarter that you received active duty pay. So there's these other things, too, that I think kind of get tied in that we don't even realize that are additional expenses on top of that. I didn't even know that.
Right, and it seems like, you know, they pay these guys squat for what they do, especially the, you know, the active duty guys out in the front lines. And then when they get back and they have, you know, it tears me up to see these guys on TV having to sue or struggle to get benefits or more help from the military. What, you know, how can they turn their backs on them? It's just so wrong.
Wrong is not even a word strong enough to cover what is going on. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And with these new ways of warfare, where the guys are coming back, and you'd already made the statement that they don't even know who their families are, or there's so much rage. Who was telling me the number of guys that are coming back from, like, Afghanistan that are killing themselves, like one every 15 days or something like that?
Can I
they're all screwed up.
Can I summarize it for you?
Yeah.
Yes, you're right, Rebecca. Military suicides are at an all-time high. Spousal abuse, military divorces, you know,
yeah.
It's at an all-time high. It's just awful. It's 10 years of war, multiple deployments, and, it's ridiculous. And only Ron Paul's really been called, you know, had the guts to say, you know, tell it like it is. And he's a 5-year veteran. So if anybody has the right to speak their minds, it's our vets. They've already served. And if they don't have free speech, then I don't know who does.
I know, but if you keep our country, you know, just trying to keep food on the table and the roof over their head, there's no way they're going to be able to have the bandwidth to take on anything like this to even think about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you impose kind of a, you know, financial crisis in the United States, people can't even fathom about the military guys coming home because they don't know where their next meal's coming from.
impose is right. And of course, there's also a lot of homelessness amongst veterans. And there's a similar situation happening in your state with your prison guards. As far as retirement and the ridiculous public pensions, something like when they, towards the end of their tenure, they start, how does it go? They start putting in more overtime. And so their pay is based on like a lot of their overtime. So it's, the California prison system is really askew too, with the pay and the benefits that these public employees get, you know, compared to the private sector. And you know, public employees, that money comes from our taxes. It's not from greedy big businessmen. They're paid through taxes. And yes, they should have some retirement, but it just seems things are so out of whack.
Right. I think, you know, those are areas that we could look at to see if the figures are really, you know, where they should be right now. Yeah, I think a lot of times retirement might be based on your last 3 years, 5 years, 10 years worth of salary. So if you can bloat it, and obviously at your end of your career, you're going to have a higher rate of pay anyway. If you've been in a job, it's just automatically going to go up, or, you know, I mean, it should. So you're going to be having a higher rate of pay just based on years of service. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a sad situation with these boys and girls, or guys and gals coming home. And I want to say thank you very much to your guest as well. You went over there. It was a no-win situation, and you did your duty, and I hope as much as possible you don't become one of the lost and forgotten ones.
Well, Jeff is not lost and forgotten by me, and he's a veteran. And, you know, when I have these discussions with vets, they never get mad at me when the way I criticize certain things. None of them ever called me unpatriotic or anti-American, because they basically agree with me on a lot of this stuff about how they're treated and what they come home to and what they don't have to come home to. And I just want to hip you to something. You mentioned you had some family members maybe died at Pearl Harbor back in the day.
Yeah.
Or you had some, okay, did you know, I just want to clue you in on something. Against the advice of his admirals, FDR moved the fleet from the West Coast, California and the West Coast, to Pearl Harbor, which wasn't even a state, which was taken sort of violently by the federal government and American businessmen around 1895 from the Hawaiian monarchy. Okay, and then prior to that, FDR cut off Japan's oil and a lot of the raw materials we sent them. He embargoed them, which is an act of war. So he maneuvered them. He knew this was going to happen. Plus, the military had broken the Japanese code, so they knew something was going to happen. So I contend that they maneuvered the country into World War II as a way, with the Japan, as a way also to get into Europe later. So, and these are things I didn't learn in school in history.
I absolutely agree. I know that there had been a submarine fence that went up and down into the Pearl Harbor, I don't know if you call it bay or whatever that's called. And
the mouth
that was
of the bay.
Down, and they recorded that a Japanese sub had come in there and looked around and went back out again. So, yeah, it was a way to get us into it and make us look like we were the victims and, you know, we were going to go and take care of business.
Well, they did detect a small Japanese sub. You're right about that. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. So they've staged most of these wars, and of course, it's all wrapped up in patriotism. And I'm very pro gun ownership and gun rights and, you know, self defense. But at the same time, it's totally wrong to pick a fight where you're going to get people killed needlessly. You know, I want the truth. Tell us the truth. You know, if somebody.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like if you want to go to war, go to war. Don't go ahead and cloud it and all this other stuff that's going on, right? And but I don't know, it's like, I don't know if they don't feel the general population can accept the truth, or, you know, it's just part of that insidiousness of, you know, the dark side, so to speak, that they're always used to conniving and being clever. Maybe that's part of their thrill too, you know what I mean?
But yes, it is. It is part of that. Go ahead, sorry.
I wanted to bring up one thing. What about that bill that they were trying to get passed, where is if the military can come into your house and just detain you as a terrorist without any proof or something like that? What was that was going on the past couple of days?
Or also executing people, even Americans, without a trial. If you're a terrorist, they can assassinate you.
What was that bill like? If you had a finger, you were missing a finger, they could detain you. Under, I guess, thinking that you might have been a bomb maker and you blew off one of your fingers.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know all the details, but all I know is that the national security apparatus has really grown, and this has been an excuse 9/11 to grow. You know, the police state, and I believe that there are detention centers. Jesse Ventura has seen them. Alex Jones has seen them. They say they're going to round up illegal aliens, but you know, I don't trust the government at all.
Yeah, and I know Fred Bell had been talking to Jesse Ventura, and he ended up dead a few days after that.
Oh, really?
They were talking about some of the stuff that was going on, but anyway, I'll sign off so that you know, you guys can keep going, and maybe another caller will come. You know, will want to get on the line and chat with you guys. I love your show. It's hard to listen to because it's so painful about what actually our government is doing to us, but it has to be told. So thank you for getting the message out there.
Thank you for calling, Rebecca. Come back soon.
Yeah. Take care. Bye.
Okay. Okay. So Jeff, what'd you think about that? We got another enlightened lady out there.
Well, she was a smart gal. She got her facts together, you know, and it's the whole thing about having discussions is to have your facts and not just ramble on about things that you don't really understand. You know, if everybody that's out there has got something that they really know, you know, that there's things that you're not sure of and things you're not too knowledgeable on, but there's people that there's maybe three or four really strong facts that they really know about something that's important. And if you get enough of those facts together from enough people talking about it, it's like a teacher passing it on to the next person and to the next person. Because we don't really have, in this day and time, you really don't have time to read all the papers. Plus, hardly nobody reads the paper today anyway. It's television or radio, and if you're working all the time, you don't really have time to even hardly do that. So to find out really what's going on, people don't communicate any longer hardly about what's going on. People just listen to what's being put down and what the world is doing and stuff like that, and then we go on with our lives. That's why it's so easy for almost all the governments today to deal with the people how they want to, because especially in a country like the United States, you know, you see these people that are doing all this uprising all over the far, you know, Middle East and everything right now, and doing stuff. They're, you know, I give them really a lot of praise for standing up and saying, you know, enough is enough of this regime, enough of these bad leadership. You know, they may make it worse, but at least they're trying to change it.
Well, yes, they are. But however, those countries have also been infiltrated by the CIA and the Mossad, so their tentacles are in there too, and that's the problem. Also, on my show, you were talking about discussions. Even if I had opposition on here, see, unlike Rush or Hannity, I'm not gonna shut them off and, you know, go to a commercial and cut them off. They're gonna have their say. I'm not gonna give them, you know, 20 seconds and then try to keep the regime intact, you know, and their Zionist masters, you know, putting down Ron Paul or alternative, you know, people who don't agree. So that's one thing I like about how I do things. It's like, okay, bring it on. We'll talk about it, you know.
You ought to have a Ron Paul show. You know, like 1 week, just have people just do call-ins and talk about what they think and put down things, you know, and let. And have a communication about Ron Paul, because this, you know, you can't just have straight dialogue about it. You need a lot of people putting input in from what they feel, what kind of deal he's been getting from the country, what kind of deal he's getting from the networks, what kind of deal he's getting from his own party. It's not really hardly anybody talking about him, and that's out in the public eye. And your radio show is not like maybe Meet the Nation, but at least people are listening, just like the lady just called in. I mean, she's listening. There's probably a lot of other people out there listening. And, you know, and here is this one guy, Ron Paul, who's got a whole lot more on the ball than about almost all of those other people put together. And nobody will deal with him because he won't play their game, you know. And the whole Democratic-Republican thing is a buddy thing. Even though, you know, they're like these guys you see all the time where they fuss and fight on a talk show, like they're going to chew each other up. And then when the lights go down or whatever and the cameras relax, they all reach over and handshake and smile at each other and talk like, you know, it, because it's kind of a game they all play.
Well, that's, you know, because you're right. That's because they basically agree on everything except how much to spend. We have, as I've said before, we have the one government party with two heads, or the one government bird of prey with two wings, you know, and they're pretty much, it's the opinion cartel. They're pretty much all going down the same path. Foreign policy has hardly changed under Obama. You know, it's the same thing. You know, if Ron Paul is, I'll bet your life on this, Jeff. If Ron Paul is not nominated, Obama's going to win. Ron Paul is the only Republican who can beat Obama. Romney ain't going to beat him. Gingrich ain't going to beat him. Gingrich is awful. You know, I just won't vote. It'll be like 2008. I couldn't stand Obama. I knew what would happen with Obama. I knew this would happen. And I couldn't stand McCain, so I didn't vote. Then I'm not going to vote next year unless I can write Ron Paul's name in on the ballot. It's just a shame that he's treated this way. But it's a lot different this time around, though. He is getting more press. I'm always seeing links about him on my internet site. And so, yes, there is a lot going on. He refused to be in there's a December 27th debate that Donald Trump is hosting. And he doesn't want to be in that because it's just a circus, you know. And so
I can believe that. Yeah.
And Donald Trump has been a real bastard towards him anyway. You know, he said stuff even at a convention like Ron Paul has no chance of winning. He'll never get, you know, so Trump is, well, he's full of himself. He's quite the showman, you know. He's put Ron Paul, but Ron Paul, you know, his handlers said he's not going to come on the show. It's like a circus. It demeans the meaning, you know, the office of the president. So he won't be on it. You know, Ron Paul's not going to go to, follow some invitation from Donald Trump. He doesn't, you know, dance to Donald Trump's beck and call like the rest are going to go, you know, so that's where he stands from. And that's like how I am. I can't be bought. I can't be intimidated or bullied by political correctness. And so that's the path I'm going down. I know you've listened to my show before and you see how I run things and I handle things. So, but I'm not going to back away from that. That's how, in my world, that's how it has to be. Not going to back down. I'm going to speak truth to power. If I'm wrong, fine. You know, if I'm incorrect, but usually I'm pretty correct. Anyway, see, I'm looking at the time here, Jeff, and it's come to the end, pretty much the show, into the conclusion here of things. I want to thank you for coming on again and bringing up the things you spoke about. I'm glad we had a caller on here. That was interesting, speaking with Rebecca. And I always welcome other callers. In fact, I forgot to give the number out, but I'll have to have you back on again. We can continue this at a later date.
Next time I'm going to bring some research on Ron Paul.
Okay, that's fine. And more of this, especially more of this military stuff, if you have any more details about, you know, what the pensions are costing and all this sort of stuff, because the military budget is ridiculously huge, and a lot of it's just for defending our rich allies, South Korea, Japan, Western Europe, and more weaponry when, you know, they're not spending enough on humans or the people who serve and what, you know, what they deserve. So, again, thank you for serving. Thank you for your time. Thank you for calling in here at Third Stream View. So I'm going to sign off now, Jeff. Thanks again, my friend. And this is your humble host, PK, signing off from Third Stream View. I'm here every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern here on Third Stream View. So thank you, everyone. Please tune in next week.